from stpetecatalyst.com.
And we are back on My Mayor, and joining me is candidate Ken Welch. Hello, Ken.
Joe, good to see you again. It's been almost 12 hours.
I know. How's life on the campaign trail since I saw you 10 hours ago?
Life is certainly interesting, but we're having a good time as folks are now actually getting their ballots in the mail and voting, and we're still going out for forums and talking with the community. You know, we have to be fluid now with, we're seeing the resurgence of COVID and the Delta variant, so we're adjusting, trying to stay safe, but we're still going out and talking to folks at this point.
That's great. So today we're looking at your content diet, and we're hearing where you get your information from, your news, your non-news, and your fun recreational guilty pleasure stuff.
So yeah,
let's dig in with news, excluding the Catalyst. Where are you getting your news from?
You know, I'm going to have to start paying you guys like a therapy fee, because this is really, you know, I'm going through introspectively seeing how I'm spending my time. And this all goes back to mom. You know, I had the big red World Book Encyclopedias, the full set. And so I would read them front to back. And so for me, the news and the non-news learning is all kind of one thing. So I kind of went through and looked at how do I start my day. And I start with, most of us have Alexas. So I start with a flash briefing every morning. I figured I'd just go down and tell you what's on my flash briefing. So it starts with a Bible verse. Then it goes to our local news, ABC Action News, NPR, Daily, The Daily from the New York Times, BBC World Service, Bloomberg First News, CNET News, and then The Daily Show, which is quasi-news. And then I always have Morning Joe on my DVR, and then daily, all the local newscasts are on my DVR, NBC Evening News, and then weekly, 60 Minutes, The News with John Oliver is kind of, again, quasi-news, but he does some really in-depth analysis of issues like the PACE program, for example. And then there are event-driven content, C-SPAN, local government, news channels like City of St. Pete, Pinellas County. I watch those routinely. And then online, of course, the Catalyst, but also Florida Politics. Twitter's, you know, an essential tool. That's where I get a lot of the news feeds from on items, instead of actually, you know, just going to a particular feed. I see what's happening on Twitter and then go there. And then Facebook. And I recently joined Clubhouse, and I'm finding that to be really interesting content. And then on the fun, guilty pleasure side, obviously any football, I'm bad enough that I'm watching replays of, you know, Super Bowls and football games because I'm, you know, we're waiting for football to start again. Certainly the Rays and the Lightning whenever they're on. And then on YouTube, that's where I go to my hobbies. There are a number of Harley YouTube channels where, you know, enthusiasts talk about gear for bikes and safe riding techniques, all those kinds of things. Music, of course. You probably see my Fender Strat in the background. So a lot of guitar techniques and players. Love HGTV, Love It or List It, and then Fixer Upper, two of my favorites. And then anything to do with sci-fi or the military, Matrix, Star Trek, Walking Dead, Band of Brothers, all of that is must-see TV for me. So there you go in a nutshell. That's all my content. And let's chat.
It's a great list. Those book encyclopedias, I hear they do those on CD now too, so you don't have to have the whole book. They've upgraded those.
There's something about having the paper in your hands with this big, massive red book. But that's where I learned about reptiles, dinosaurs, snakes, all that good stuff.
So a lot of the news sources that you mentioned are, you know, traditional news sources, the professional organizations, kind of scattered mm-hmm. in there now. There are a lot of really niche and specific news organizations. And sort of with that, you know, has been unique perspectives, specific perspectives, and some of that, we'll call that non-objective content, seems to have then kind of blown back on the bigger organizations. To the point where, you know, there's very few sources that people would universally agree are totally objective. So, you know, when you're understanding yeah. that there are so many perspectives, to different issues. What's your strategy as far as how to triangulate your own perspective that you can really rely on?
And that's so true, Joe. So much has changed, but I think if you get to something like C-SPAN, I mean, I just love watching the content and making up your own mind based on facts and science. And there is bias in a lot of the mainstream organizations, whether it's right or left. And you just have to look at the science and get to a determination of the facts as you see it. It's kind of like the going back to the encyclopedia. You know, do the research yourself. Come to your own conclusions of what makes sense. Even now, with some of the hearings that are going on about the insurrection at the Capitol, you know, I think you have to take a look at that and make a determination for yourself. There is spin all around that issue, but you have to let your eyes and ears tell you what the truth is. You can see it in front of you and come to your own conclusion. Unfortunately, we're at that point where, you know, social media is catering to our biases and feeding us content based on what we already believe. And so we really have to be intentional about getting to the facts and the science and the history of what is actually happening and trying to chart a path. On the one hand, having the freedom of the internet has expanded our knowledge, but it's also allowed for a lot of misinformation to go out. And that's one of the key things that we need to try to come to terms with as a society.
And, you know, with that, that sort of science-based approach, that is not something that everybody does, obviously. And so, you know, we can see that in some of the really boisterous content that's out there that would contradict mm-hmm. science. And, you know, a lot of times, perhaps that's because, you know, people's information, like you said, is tied to their identity, is tied to the marketing or, you know, the specific echo chamber that they've found themselves in. So what are some strategies to counteract that, you know, as if elected mayor, you know, how do you lead folks to be more discerning about how they, receive and interpret information?
I think just having honest one-on-one conversations is the best way to do that. You know, I've done that as a commissioner, go out to where people are, have the conversation. I've had, you know, community conversations at libraries, at parks, at fire stations, at community centers, just going to where people are, sitting down in a place where they're comfortable and just having a conversation. You know, what are your challenges? What are you facing in your neighborhood? What do you want to see changed? And it helps cut through a lot of the rhetoric, and you'll find that there's a whole lot more common ground than you would think. You know, I found that out, as we've talked about before, being an Uber and Lyft driver and providing 1,000 rides in our community, you meet folks from every stripe. And in that small space, those are real honest conversations about what's happening. And it's amazing the amount of synergy there is on what folks are concerned about. It's growth, it's infrastructure, it's neighborhood safety. It's, you know, are we losing our character? And that was across the line, regardless of folks' backgrounds. And they want to protect our environment as well. And so I think if you have that honest conversation and connect on a human level, then you cut out a lot of that rhetoric.
All right. And it's you, it's a Harley, it's an unlimited budget and a YouTube channel. What's the theme? What's the show about?
Oh, that's actually coming. It's Project Connect. This is the book I'm writing, Project Connect, 1,000 Rides to Common Ground. So that's what I'm working on based on the Uber and Lyft experience. And it, you know, one of the chapters is you're not that important. And that's about politicians. And, you know, out of 1,000 rides, only 3 people recognize me. One was a young man from a high school that I'd mentored at. One was a lobbyist. And the other was the assistant MPO director, Sarah Ward. I mean, you couldn't make this stuff up. But the other, you know, 997 people plus aren't tied into politics in their daily lives. They're trying to live their life, put food on the table, take care of their kids or their parents. And I think that's the realization that we have to keep this in balance and be able to really connect to people. So that's what the Harley and the Uber story will be. It's about our real connections and how we move forward as a community.
That's great. Candidate Ken Welch, thanks for joining us again, and we'll see you in the near future.
I'll see you in 12 hours. Thanks, Joe.
We are back on My Mayor, and joining me is candidate Darden Rice. Hi, Darden.
Hi, Joe. Good afternoon. Good to be here.
Good to see you. How's life on the campaign trail?
Things are going really well. Our vote-by-mail ballot started landing in people's mailboxes, and our team is working on chasing those ballots now. We had a great event with Victory Fund, Ruth's List, and Equality Florida Wednesday night at Station House. And I just had a great interview on ABC this morning to talk about my campaign and my vision and experience.
All right. Well, they've set the bar. Let's beat it. We're talking about your content diet today. We're looking at where you get your absorb your content from, your news, your non-news, and your sort of fun, recreational, guilty pleasure stuff. So excluding the catalyst, where do you get your news from?
Every morning I listen to two podcasts. I listen to NPR's Up First, and I listen to the New York Times, The Daily. And I get to listen to that while I'm getting ready or driving to work. And then I also subscribe to the Tampa Bay Times and the New York Times, both digitally and the hard copy. And of course, I read The Catalyst. So that's where I get a lot of my news. I like to sometimes graze Twitter to just, you know, look at what people are thinking and saying and keeping up with what some other cities are doing. But yeah, those are pretty much my main news sources.
So the ones that you mentioned were kind of the, you know, traditional news outlets. With things, you know, The Catalyst being an example, there's a lot of there's a lot more opportunity for other types of sort of alternate news sources to proliferate now, even, you know, just down to big presences on social media, to, you know, to more organized things like some of the, you know, the smaller news orgs we see in the area. So how has that impacted your absorption of news? You know, do you find that there's value in that, or is the cost sometimes with the lack of maybe objectivity or things like that, maybe more dangerous than maybe the value it provides?
Well, I'm a history major, so I always keep in mind the source of the news that I'm reading, and you know, try to be aware of, you know, how objective or what slants or, you know, leanings, you know, my news sources might have. I think it's good for me to keep up with traditional news sources because I think that's what most people are reading and looking at. But I also like to supplement it with, you know, keeping up with things on Twitter from specialized blogs. There's a lot of blogs out there on, you know, where we have a lot of new urbanism and urbanistas talking about everything from very city related, everything from transit to housing to the arts. And you know, I think Twitter provides a great way to kind of graze through that information that helps supplement or fill in what, you know, what you're never going to see, you know, in a regional newspaper.
And then as we move into non-news type of learning, where do you go for that?
Well, I love to read books on adaptive leadership. Adaptive leadership that I actually studied with Marty Linsky. And I'm inspired by that type of leadership. That's my style. It's all about leading people through change, which is what we're going to be doing a lot of in the next few years. I'm very thankful that we have the presence of the Foundation for a Healthy St. Pete. And through their lecture series and their book club offerings, you know, I've been able to listen to and read Richard Rothstein on The Color of Law, be exposed to authors like Ibram Kendi on anti-racism and Robin DiAngelo on white fragility. So I'm really grateful to learn more about the racial justice movement through the eyes of those authors. And that's just kind of a tip of the iceberg of some really good literature out there on racial justice and equity. Also, and this is probably no surprise, there's a new podcast that I love listening to, hosted by Richard Florida, and it's called The Mayors. And it's an interview, you know, it's about a half hour, 45 minute interview with various mayors throughout the country. And it is just loaded with so much great information and insight. So that's my latest podcast that I've been hooked on.
And you mentioned absorbing some content on leadership and leading through change. And then you followed that with some subjects that are definitely in the process of some big changes. So what have been the emerging, as you combine those two areas of learning, what have been the emerging themes with regard to leading through that type of change, your guiding philosophies?
Well, leading through change is important because change is loss, and you have to help people process loss, whether that's losing a travel lane to a bike lane or losing what you feel like your community character is when an older building is torn down. You have to really communicate and stay with people through change. And it's a different mindset. It's a different skill set. It takes a lot more work because there's a lot more back and forth. It's a little bit messier up front, but when you really engage with people and it's a two-way conversation and you're working with people and kind of staying with them through the stages of the work, you do get to better outcomes. And if you try to skip through those stages, you find out that you have to go back and start over because you really can't skip over doing that type of work with the public. So I love a really, just kind of feasting on that type of, reading and ideas. And I think definitely the adaptive leadership is going to be real. That approach is going to be really important as we grapple with, issues of, what does it mean to truly have a policies that reflect improvements in equity in a measurable way. And it's exciting thought leadership. And I think that having a strong understanding of that is going to be ultimately necessary and beneficial to running a city like St. Pete.
That's insightful. Thank you. So the fun stuff, what do you do for recreation, guilty pleasure? Where does that content come from?
Well, I am quintessential Generation X. So anytime, periodically, it's fun to watch the Spinal Tap mockumentary for just some fun and silliness. I love Veep with Julia Louis-Dreyfus. It's written so well. And Selena Myers is this really hysterical character. And Joe, I was trying to flip through to see if there was like a funny Selena quote I could share with you, but I don't think there's anything I can really share on broadcast, but Veep is a fun one. And then lastly, I have to say my all-time favorite that I've just really enjoyed the last few years is Schitt's Creek. And it's an unlikely story, sort of a reverse Beverly Hills story. But ultimately, it's about love, dedication, joy. But it really sneaks up on you with a very powerful story about acceptance. And the characters you just come to learn to love. And it's also hysterical. It's a funny show. So that's my fun content and guilty pleasures.
So with your guilty pleasures, one of the consistent themes through them was humor. All of them had some element of being funny. Being humorous or being funny as a leader is a tricky thing. It's an easy place to be attacked. If elected mayor, what would you bring to bear as sort of your philosophy on humor and that presence as mayor?
There are a few public officials who are really good at, as you get to know them, you do sense that sense of humor that they have. And Yeah, I've had a lot of friends say to me that, you know, Darden, a lot of people don't realize, you know, you're really, you can be really funny. I think what's so important is as a public official, you know, your humor has to be self-deprecating. It can never be anything that's directed at other people. But, you know, a wry understanding at the conditions of life and the things that are foisted upon us and how we just handle it with the best grace possible, you know, that's, you know, I think it was Oscar Wilde also that said, and this is important for me because I can be a truth teller, that I think Oscar Wilde said, when you tell people the truth, be prepared to make them laugh. Otherwise, they're going to kill you. So having a sense of humor always does help.
Got it. Darden Rice, thank you. Join us on My Mayor. We'll be back in a couple weeks.
From stpcatalyst.com.